Hey, Steel and Nazers, it's Magic Mike here. We got a new sponsor, Slight Edge
Fitness and Performance.
If you're looking to shed those extra quarantine pounds and get stronger, or you're an athlete looking to get a slight edge on your competition, we got the gym for you. Introducing Slight Edge Fitness and Performance, conveniently located on 101 French Ave in Braintree, Mass. Nice local gym. Slight Edge is offering individual, small group, and sports performance training in a private gym setting. And once again, it's by one of the best. Craig Kelly's been doing this for years. Great program over there. Slight Edge trainers will be sure to get your heart rate up, increase strength, and help you reach your fitness goals with a customized program. Find them on Instagram using the handle Slight Edge Fit. Give them a follow, or you can visit their website, slightedgefit.com, and set up a free strategy session while you're there. All the boys are going to be going into the gym very soon, and let's all look good this summer. Feel good, be great. Let it rip.
Welcome to Steel and Naz, Mass Music Radio's Pioneer Podcast, powered by Slight Edge Fitness and Performance. We're located, you know what, we're back at it, right at the Mass Music Radio headquarters tonight. Happy to be here. Feels like I'm back home.
HQ, baby.
Let's get it started. On the show tonight, another family member of the Boston Sports Journal, Bruins writer Connor Ryan, joins us to talk bees, including the emergence of the goaltender Jeremy Swayman. You know, we got into a bunch of, you know, the deep the Bruins are. You know, they have a lot of stuff against them. Big 6-3 W. We recorded on a Sunday here, so yeah, we're doing that kind of post game. Afterwards, we're going deep tonight, including our thoughts on the retirement of Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman, the rise and, you know, up and down of the Boston Red Sox that we've seen so far in the first 15, 16 games here, our UFC 261 Masvidal versus Usman predictions, which I will be present for. I will be in Jacksonville next week, guys.
Hide the kids.
Yep, we got a whole lot more. So sit back, drop the puck, and enjoy. Here's BSJ's Connor Ryan.
The kids.
We're now joined by the Boston Sports Journal Bruins writer, Connor Ryan. Hey, Connor, man, you know, 6-3 W today at the Garden. It's getting close to 70 degrees outside. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Anytime. Yeah, we'll just jump right into the Bruins talk. You know, they lost last week. I think it was 8-1 against the Capitals. I know they were kind of down defensemen. Vladar was playing, and, you know, you spin it back to today, 6-3 win with, you know, Krejci, Bergeron, and Marchand getting on the board, 2 goals each. Tuukka Rask back in goal for, I think, his second game now. I just want to know your thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I mean, what a difference a week makes, right, in terms of you look back that last time they played the Capitals, and you lose 8-1. You had pretty much an AHL-level defense out there due to injuries. Yeah. You didn't really know what the Bruins were going to do at the deadline, right? You were kind of in that crossroads of, is it even worth kind of buying in and adding talent to this team, where it kind of seems like they were kind of going nowhere for a while there. And then all of a sudden, the Bruins were able to get a player of Taylor Hall's caliber for pennies on the dollar. You got a really good bottom six guy in Curtis Lazar. On top of that, and a guy in Mike Riley for a 2022 third-round pick for, you know, a guy that really fills an area of need on that decor. And what we know, you know, they start going on a run again. And it's not just them beating up teams like the Sabres. I mean, you beat a team in the Islanders twice that has really given you a lot of trouble this year. That's a team that you kind of look ahead to the playoffs. They seem like they're built to go on a pretty deep run there. And then you play a team in Washington that's always a big measuring stick, right? And, I mean, it wasn't really even close. The Bruins just seemed like everything's kind of falling into place at the right time. And I think maybe the most encouraging part of all this is you look at how well they've played the last, you know, 4 or 5 days. And this team still is not anywhere close to, you know, hitting their ceiling, right? You still have three key guys out there. Like, it's, you know, you're projecting, you're already very encouraged by what you've seen. And, you know, in this game on Sunday, it's, you know, you get 2 goals from Marchand, Bergeron, and Krejci. Like, your big guns are already performing very well. But
yeah, the first line's dominating.
Yeah, but then, you know, you look forward, you still have to get that third line going. You still have a whole bunch of guys getting healthy on defense. So this team isn't even kind of close at reaching kind of their potential this year, which Bruins fans has to be very exciting because it seems like they really kind of caught their second win.
It's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing.
Yeah, another thing I was going to touch on too was the obviously the trade deadline acquisitions. I just think Taylor Hall opens up so much where you have Krejci and Smith. And, you know, it seems like every year they're always looking for someone to hook up Krejci. Like he's who was the guy, Nash, a couple of years ago from the Rangers coming over. And it just seems like they're trying to hook him up with someone. And hopefully they got their guy in Taylor Hall. But I think it really opens up the third line in terms of, you know, all these guys are pretty good. You know, Grinders can actually put the puck in the net with Richie Coyle and DeBrusque. But I think it really puts in the fruition that, like, all these guys are on third line, and it just means it's kind of even more stacked of a team. And then your fourth liners are, you know, Corrali, you pick up Lazar, and then Wagner's been playing a lot better. I just think this team's fully in depth, and I think you're absolutely right when it comes to, you know, they're getting healthy at the right time, and, you know, they're really getting these things going as you push towards postseason play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at that third line especially, I mean, just look back 2 years ago when they got to game seven of a cup final, a key piece in that run was the fact that just at the right time, Charlie Coyle, Marcus Johansson, Danton Heinen really kind of caught fire. And it makes a whole difference when that line's really rolling because, you know, it's to be expected, right, that the Bergeron line's going to put in the work as you expect.
Yeah,
you hope the Krejci line contributes. But where you kind of get those really favorable matchups where you can really kind of put a team on its heels is when, like, the Coyle line's rolling, right? I mean, how many times did you see during that Columbus series, during the Carolina series, where they were game planning all around shutting down the Bergeron line? It works if you want to put all your resources into it. But when Charlie Coyle and those guys are scoring against you, you really don't have much of an answer. So the fact that they're able to get a guy like Hall and push guys further down the lineup, which I think is key, like, Jake DeBrusque, obviously, you know, has not been the year that he's wanted.
No, but he doesn't look too good.
Yeah, but, you know, you put him down further into the lineup, and he's your third-line left winger. Yeah. I think you're in a much better spot than if he's your second-line guy and you need him to produce, right? Like, anything he produces right now is gravy because you've got two really, really good top lines rolling. So the whole trickle-down effect is just massive for this team right now. And, again, they're not scoring yet, but if your third line going to the playoffs is Nick Ritchie, Charlie Coyle, and Jake DeBrusque, you're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I was thinking about DeBrusque. Obviously, he's had a disappointing season, but you look in the past couple seasons, he's been a goal scorer for this team. And, you know, I think his ceiling would be like a, you know, a good second liner, but getting him on third line, I think, just to make your point here of, you know, how big this depth is already, you know, offensively.
Oh, yeah. And, again, it's one of those situations where, in most seasons, if Bruins didn't add at the deadline or you were going into it expecting Jake DeBrusque to be the guy that almost had 30 goals for you his second year, you'd be in deep trouble, right, if this was the production you're getting. But I think the fact that you're able to slot him further down the lineup and putting it with Coyle, I think, is a good fit. I mean, everyone knows that Jake DeBrusque has played with David Krejci for a long, long time now, but you kind of see where these guys fit in. And putting you with Coyle, who's a bit more of a puck possession guy, a guy who really likes to extend those ozone shifts. If, you know, Jake DeBrusque, he doesn't have to reinvent the wheel when he's on that line, right? If you just, you know, go back to basics, you down low in the crease, hoping to get tips, rebounds with a guy like Charlie Coyle holding on to the puck, it's a pretty sound formula, right, to generate offense. So I think if you put DeBrusque in that spot where he's no longer a featured top six guy, you can just play a simple game. I think that's going to be key for him to kind of getting back on track because you saw, you know, even a few years ago in that Toronto series of when DeBrusque gets hot, he really kind of scores in bunches. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they need it, especially in the playoffs.
And he's got burners. So, like, it's big that he's not going up against, like, the best defenseman on the other team and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. If he's going up against third pairing guys, then that's exactly what you want in that matchup. A guy who on paper is a, you know, could be a 25-30 goal scorer. If he's the guy that gets slotted down and he's, you know, matched up against third pairing guys or sheltered defensemen on the other team, that's exactly the matchup you want.
Yeah, I just think at the end of the day, this team, if you put it all together, they're going to have what it takes to at least compete towards postseason play. What I wanted to get at is the situation at goaltender. Obviously, Raskin has been down. Coming back, and then, you know, Halak got COVID. So, you know, you saw Swayman and Vladar play, but, you know, with this situation at goaltender, you know, you get another shutout from Swayman the other day. What do you think they're going to do with the backup role?
It's going to be fascinating once everyone gets back healthy, which I imagine is going to be pretty soon. I know Halak has been on the COVID list for pretty much 2 weeks now. He was just activated on Saturday. They expect him to hopefully be back with the team when they go on this upcoming road trip. However, like it's one of those situations where I think ideally what the Bruins want, at least for this year, is to get obviously Rask back healthy. And I think you want Halak back in there just to see, you know, how he's holding up. That being said, like I wouldn't be surprised, especially based on how, you know, frantic the schedule is down the stretch, that, all right, you know, we have to get Rask the reps to get him season. You need to make sure Halak is healthy and able to serve in a backup role. But I wouldn't be surprised if they still give Swayman a couple reps just because he's earned it, right? I mean, yeah. I don't know how anyone can look at those performances. It's not like he's, you know, getting shots from the blue line that he's easily tracking. He's, you know, stopping breakaways, grade A looks, all these things. I mean, he's won 4 out of his 5 starts. And if it was a replacement level goalie or a career AHL journeyman kind of guy, I don't think you get 4 wins based on the chances.
No, absolutely not.
Right. I mean, he's been fantastic. So will we reach a situation where, you know, I don't think we're going to have a scenario like, you know, Jordan Binnington in 2019, where all of a sudden,
steals,
you know,
the show.
Yeah, we're too good.
They had nobody.
Yeah. Like, I don't think we're going to get to that point yet. That being said though, I think you look at down the stretch here, if Halak is, you know, slow to recover, we don't really even know his status yet. Like we know he's, you know, off the COVID list. That doesn't mean he's in the clear, right? Doesn't mean he's up to conditioning or anything like that. So if we go into the final month and Halak's, you know, got a 880 save percentage or something like that over his last couple of starts and he's still winning games, then I think you kind of have to look at the situation, right? Of, you know, is it warrant, you know, have him be a backup in that situation, which is not what the Bruins expected. You know, the Bruins in an ideal situation, I think, thought they were going to have Swayman down in Providence the whole year, and see how he was going to, you know, adjust to going from the college ranks all the way up to pro game. So far, he's run with it. But it makes for an interesting scenario because you could make the argument, even when Halak was playing in March, that Swayman was the better goalie. So it's fascinating. And I think for the Bruins, it's really interesting moving forward of what they end up doing, because I think they thought Swayman was, like most goalies, 2-3 years away from being a viable NHL starter. All of a sudden now he's got a 940 save percentage. Yeah. So it kind of really accelerates the timeline.
The Alaskan can play.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. It's because we let it ride.
You guys had him on the show, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what was your, we were trying to come up with a nickname for him. What'd you have, Jim?
Well, I've been seeing a lot of swag men out there right now, but when we had him on the podcast, we tried to, you know, incorporate his Alaskan roots, and what better nickname than the Alaskan Bullworm for all the SpongeBob fans out there. I thought it was pretty good. It's not catching on, though.
And see, that's a good one, too, because, you know, it's a good reference. Like, there'll be, like, a good amount of people who would still get it. Some people would be in the dock, but that's kind of good with a good nickname, right?
Hell yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Those shirts could be outside of the garden.
Of course.
The Alaskan Bullworm, that'd be a hell of a shirt. I'd wear that.
Yeah. $15.
My thing for the Bruins, though, I just think, like, obviously Jeremy Swayman has had a good start, but it would be a ballsy move if they were just like, yeah, Halak, like, you're not the backup anymore. Like, I just think it's more of a, you know, when you change the, like, into next season more of a move
right,
than that.
Yeah.
But I want them to do it, obviously, because I root for the kid. I want him to do as good as he can. But at the end of the day, you know, a very young guy with a veteran that you already have in that, which you already know that you have, you know, it's just, it'd be tough. It's going to be a tough call for the Bruins.
Ride the hot goalie, man.
Yeah.
Right. It's a lot easier to, you know, when you go into the off season, it's just mutually part ways with a UFA like Halak, right?
Yeah.
Instead of being like, hey, midway through, hey, sorry you have COVID. I know you're like, you're having trouble breathing, but we're going to replace you. Because I know the optics aren't going to look very good. But
take a hike, right?
Let's not forget that Rask just abandoned us last year, too. I mean, I think Swayman's the obvious choice here. I've been saying it before he started.
I'm fully bracing for those. I know what's going to happen is, like, the last week of the season, Rask is going to, you know, have, like, a stinker against, like, the Rangers or something like that. And Swayman's going to have a shutout in, like, the last game, like a garbage time game, and it's going to start. But it makes for a great conversation going into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, so. The takes are going to be fire.
Of course. They always are.
So what's been the atmosphere? Like, you've been going to the Garden, right, to cover the games, right? It hasn't been at home?
Yep.
Yeah, so what's been, like, the, I don't know, atmosphere, like, in with a limited attendance? Like, is it, It's got to be somewhat different, huh?
Oh, it's very weird. You know, it was definitely really bizarre going into it when they didn't have any fans at all. All they would have was the pumped in noise, and even that, it was something out of like the Twilight Zone. It was like it wasn't even like they were like blasting like noise. Even it was like this like faint, like kind of like ambient, like even the players said they hated it because it didn't even feel like they were like, you know, it wasn't like the Indianapolis Colts where they were blasting in the audio. Remember, like there was it wasn't like, you know, a wall of sound. It was like just this like background noise they added in over it, like, and like the timing is off. Like a guy would absolutely whiff on a shot, but they would like a button that went like the, you know, it'd be like a grade A scoring chance or something like that. So it's definitely still very weird. It's getting more normal now that you got fans back in. Hopefully by the time we get to the playoffs, they'll ease the restrictions a little bit more, and you'd be getting, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but yeah, 35, something like that. You know, if we get to the playoffs and it's, you know, half the building's filled, I think that'd be a great step forward from where we were the last year. But it's definitely really, really strange how you kind of adapt on the fly. Cause I mean, for us, we're not allowed in the locker rooms anymore. Mm-hmm. Everything through Zoom, even after, you know, home games, we're not, you know, running down to the locker room and talking to these guys. It's all through, you know, video conferencing. Same as when we go to Warrior, we're allowed in there, but we're only able to watch them on the ice. We don't get access to the lounge or talking to the players kind of face to face. So it's definitely an adjustment in terms of kind of how you go about your day-to-day stuff. Mm-hmm. You aren't able to, it's one thing where you're still able to get, you know, press conferences and all that stuff, but you miss the day-to-day of like, hey, I got to grab you for like 2 minutes for like a story or something like that. Or if like, you know, you see Jeremy Swayman, you can like talk to him about just like his day or something like that. You can't do that now unless you want to do it all through a Zoom call, which is bizarre, right?
So, I was going to say, at least you don't have to move anywhere. But yeah, that's a bummer. How you, if you just catch someone in the hall, you're just like, oh, hey, real quick.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Right. Yeah, like I'm not going to schedule like a Zoom meeting for someone to ask him like a question about like him like hiking in Alaska, right? For like a one question, right? You gotta choose your battles when you're setting up a Zoom call or something like that. So it's definitely very strange. Hopefully, by the time we get to the fall and the new season starts, it'll be somewhat getting back to normal, but you kind of roll with the punches. I'm just glad we still have hockey to cover this year. So that's the number one thing.
Good stuff. Are the concessions open?
They are. They got they have like a whole new system set up. So I don't know if you guys have been able to get over to the Garden or Fenway, but it's all like through your phone now, I think. So you don't have to like go up and wait in line. You order like at your seat, and you go up and you just pick up and go, which honestly, like if they keep that like post COVID, I'm all for it. Like, I don't want to wait.
That sounds pretty ideal. Not going to lie.
Yeah.
if only you could do that for the bathrooms, waiting on those lines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe there are a few positives to take away from all this. So that will hopefully be that. That's the one positive takeaway is now you don't have to wait in line for your $14.99. Sam Adams beer.
Yeah, right. Get the $10 chicken fingers at peace.
Right, exactly.
Back on the team a little bit. So, I mean, Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak, I think for a while, this is my opinion, like best line in hockey. You know, they keep doing it. You know, Marchand 21 goals, Bergeron 18, Pasternak 17. Like, how much are they going to have to play a factor for this team, you know, to do anything in postseason play? You've seen the last couple of years, if they ever came up short, you know, the team usually comes up short. But, like, we talked about the depth of these lines. How important of a piece are they going to have to play?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be massive. I mean, these guys have been their get-out-of-jail-free card for years, right? Even when they're playing bad, if they're stuck, you know, hemmed in their own zone, all it takes is one shift from those guys, and all of a sudden, you know, the puck's in the net, or at the very least, they're clearing it. We've had multiple times this year already where it seems like, you know, the opposing team has a promising power play. Brad Marchand gets it, forces it back, turns the puck over on a forecheck, and they have a shorthanded goal. Like, that's just how quickly they can impact the game. And it's almost, I think you've kind of hit that level with them where they've done it for so long and they've done it so well for so many years that it's almost expected, right?
Like,
as soon as this game on Sunday where, you know, Marchand gets that puck, chips it in and wins it off the forecheck. I'm like, all right, I know it's coming now. And what do you know? You know, Bergeron glides into the slot, backhander, and it's a shorthanded goal. Like, it's almost to be expected now, which is crazy when you just look at their level of production. And I think the most surprising thing is, you know, David Pastrnak's 24, Brad Marchand's getting up there, but he's still, you know, a top five player. But the fact that Bergeron at his age, with the amount of mileage he's got on him, with the amount of, you know, injuries he fights through every year, to still be, you know, a top five center and to still be so good in all areas of the ice. It's not like you're seeing, you know, him still score quite a bit, still be a great power play guy, but some, you know, his game is slipping down the other end of the ice. Like, you're not seeing that at all with him. So
I looked up something the other day. Bergeron played his first game in Boston, like for the Bruins, before David Ortiz even put on a Red Sox uniform.
Damn.
God, that is... We're gonna get to the point now where in like another like 2-3 years you're gonna have like a rookie getting called up from Providence who's like gonna be 1 year old when like Bergeron made his debut. Like that's coming in like another year.
Yeah,
year,
that's so. Right around
that,
the
that
corner.
That happens to Brady like once a week.
Exactly. Yeah, we already hit that point with Brady and like Bergeron's the next in line. But no, I think you just look at how crucial they are down both ends of the ice. Power play, obviously, which is maybe an area they still need to kind of work on, because as good as they've been, some of these lopsided games could be even more, you know, decisive if they were able to pot a few more power play goals. But you just look at how much they rely on Bergeron, especially. I mean, if one of those guys goes out with an injury, you're in the thick of it, because I don't know, anyone can kind of replicate just kind of their momentum changing, you know, game changing kind of shifts they put together. It's again, you
it's
pretty
so
much
impressive.
Expect it at this point.
Yeah, it's so impressive.
Oh yeah, the penalty kill chemistry is nuts for Bergeron and Marchand. Absolutely crazy.
When we're always when we're always talking hockey on here, I always have to ask this question: Do you think in any sense, you know, now that like you know, there's the been defensemen like Carlo getting hurt, and you know, Kevin Miller's playing every here and there, you think there's any regret of the Bruins letting go Chara? Speaking of legends, we just talked about Bergeron too.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of look at the, again, I bet if you ask the Bruins this, their first like reaction would be like, well, we couldn't, you know, imagine that all these guys were going to get hurt, which, I mean, it's hockey. I mean, I think you have to brace for the scenario.
Somebody's going down.
It's going to happen. You know, I think they definitely could use him. He's still, it's kind of unfortunate how it all ended up, where I think, you know, honestly, it's not like I think the Bruins were just like, hey, take a hike. I think they wanted him back. I think either it was just something lost in the shuffle, or they just differed on what, you know, their vision was going forward. Because, you know, it seems like from what Chara said, you know, when his first conference call as a Capital, he kind of pitched it as the fact that they wanted him to be more of like a reserve role, like, hey, you're not going to play, but you know, if you're like the seventh D, you're the next guy up. I don't think that was going to be the situation here. I imagine what it was going to be is, hey, you know, we want you to be our kind of what you are in the Capitals, right? The third pairing guy. We're going to trim your minutes down to 18, 19 a night. You're still going to be on the PK. And, you know, if you're on a back-to-back slate, we're probably going to sit you out and rest you a game or two, which, I don't know. If you ask me, that seems like it's a pretty good plan. Like, I think that's when Chara's at his best, is when you're able to manage him and save him.
Not playing.
And
him
I don't know whether you know, if Chara's still your top pairing guy, I think you're kind of asking for trouble, especially when you get to the playoffs against some of these quicker teams. Like, especially, you know, up in the bubble, he just was a step behind against Carolina. Braden Point just, you know, ran circles around him when they were playing the Lightning. Yeah, but I think you look at what his role was going to be here. I really don't think it's that different from what it is in Washington, to be honest. So I don't know whether it was just the negotiations went south, or it was just, you know, they interpreted the role differently. But it's just really unfortunate, because you look at how good this team is and how much they could obviously use him because of injuries. But if he was your third pairing guy, and you had, you know, guys like Kevin Miller and Kahlo and Grizzly healthy, that's a pretty good decor if they know Chara's your third parent
Absolutely.
Guy. So it's really just a shame that it hasn't worked out that way, because again, I still think he has value in that spot, that role.
I look in the other sense of like what their possibilities were of keeping or letting go Chara. And there's a lot of these young defensemen here, and there's a team coming to Seattle next year, and they're going to try to pick someone from here. Do you think they're trying to see their best bets, you know, what young defensemen we should keep and what others should we kind of, you know, let bounce?
Yeah, I think, you know, when the Bruins lose Chara, I think they embrace the fact that, all right, we've got, Jeremy Lozon, we got Jacob Zboril, we got all these guys who are ready to at least make the step up to the NHL level. Are they bona fide, you know, starting NHL defensemen? We don't know yet, right? We don't know, especially with a guy like Zboril going into the year. So what better time than now to find out? And again, I think you kind of look at how Zboril has been this year. He's been up and down, right? Mm-hmm. I think an ideal situation, if you get everyone back healthy, he's probably your seventh defenseman, I imagine, if you got Kevin Miller back healthy and Grzelcyk and Kyle and all those guys back. I think Lozon has value. I think he's still a guy that if you put him with McAvoy, or even if he's a third-pairing guy, him and Kevin Miller are pairing, I think that's pretty good for a decor.
But I used to hate Lozon, but he's really come on this year and, you know, has really featured that he's an actual NHL defenseman.
Yeah, and again, mm-hmm. he's not flashy. He's mm-hmm. not, you know, a guy like Grzelcyk and McAvoy or Mike Riley, but he does his job well, right? It's like Kevin Miller. Like, Kevin Miller's not flashy, but you notice him when he's out there, he makes the clean sound plays.
And he'll beat the hell out of you, you know?
Yeah, that was one of the
one of the cleanest
punches I've seen in a while the other night.
That was filthy. I tell you what, though, Chara won't be missing the Bruins because what happened? Mookie Betts leaves the Red Sox. He goes, wins a chip. Your beloved Tom Brady leaves to go to Tampa Bay. He wins the chip. And what is Chara going to do with the National with the Capitals, who I think are first place currently, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to win the cup.
We got some games in hand. We can catch up. But
I like that.
Yeah,
we're worried about the Rangers right now.
Unbiased here. So, what team do you think is the best team in the East right now? I know they're all different divisions this year. You got the Capitals, Pittsburgh. Bruins and
Islanders
and Islanders in play. Islanders have had a great season and they picked up a lot of guys on the trade deadline, just like the Bruins did. Who do you think is the best team in, I think, the best division in the NHL?
Yeah, I think right now you have to look at the Bruins and Islanders as the two top teams. And the Bruins, you know, maybe you want to call it bias, or maybe you just want to go with the fact that they played well in the last couple of games.
Definitely.
But I think when you look at the overall talent level, the overall depth, I think the Bruins, if they're firing on all cylinders, or even, again, they don't have to be, that, you know, if they still have the top six playing like it is right now, if McAvoy is playing well, if Rask is playing well, they can still, I think, beat most teams without, you know, all these guys back already, just because I think there's some of these other teams have flaws that I think you can expose. You look at Washington, they've got three lines that I think can score in bunches, as you saw last week when they dropped eight on the Bruins. But I think you look at them in a seven-game matchup. They're a big physical team. Like, even if you win that series, you're probably going to come out of it with losing a couple of bodies, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Today,
but,
good Lord. That's like the dirtiest team in hockey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's what every single game in a playoff series is going to be like. But I think when you kind of look at how you can expose them, you know, their decoy, there's a lot of big guys, but they don't do well with speed, which the Bruins now have with a lot of these other guys they've added. So you can expose them there. And also their goaltending. As much as people want to talk about the Capitals getting a guy like Anthony Mantha as kind of the big blockbuster deal, I was shocked that they didn't get another goalie, because they've got two guys who I think are 22, 23 that are both in net for them. So, and not guys
no veterans,
that...
Yeah.
Yeah, and not guys that are, you know, that young, but are, you know, established, like a Binnington or a Rask when he was 22 years old. They're not like these guys that you have to game plan around as being this, like, up-and-coming top goaltender. So I think you can expose them. Pittsburgh, they're still going to be in the mix, right? You still got the same usual suspects there. They still put random dudes next to Sidney Crosby, and all of a sudden they're 40 goal scorers. It's been the case for the last decade. They get like, you know, Cody Ceci and like the corpse of Mike Matheson, and all of a sudden it's actually top four defenseman.
Oh boy.
So I don't know how they work out there, but I think you look at just how the teams are built, though. The Islanders, I think, would seem that are gonna give you the most trouble. Yeah. I think they're gonna give most teams. They're not the most fun team to watch. You know, they're not like the Capitals, they don't burn you with speed. They, you know, tend to trap quite a bit. They play simple hockey, but other than Matthew Barzal. I mean, Matthew Barzal, you watch him. He's
that pass the other night was incredible.
Great player.
I lost it. I think I dropped my clicker. I was like, holy shit.
And then after that, like, he gets on the bench, and all of a sudden it's the same grind out hockey. But I mean, it works for them. They've got really good coach, a lot of really underrated defensemen.
Zajac always kills the Bruins every time. He coming from the Devils in the trade deadline, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, him, Paul Mary, who kills them. JG Pageau, who's ruining the Bruins since he was with the Senators. So they're a team that, again, they're not going to be the most riveting team to watch, but I mean, the Devils in the, you know, 90s and 2000s were boring as hell, and they won a couple of cups because of it. So,
oh yeah, goal, you don't have to be physical.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't have to be a, you know, a highlight reel to stack up wins in the postseason. So I think that's a team that will give you some trouble. I think those are the two teams, but again, it can change in a hurry. I thought, like, I think like most people that the Flyers were going to be like a wagon this year.
Yeah, they're falling.
And that was not the case at all. Wow. That team, I don't know what happened with Matt Niskanen, who retired before the year, but that dude was like a second pairing defenseman. That guy apparently should have won the Norris because he leaves and like that defense just crumbles. Like, I don't know what happened there. So
I'm hearing talk radio all the time, like on the way home from work recently, and they're just talking about how half this roster is like a bunch of bums. And I think this might be one of the most deepest teams in hockey when you talk about after the trade deadline, you know, their potential of what could happen. I mean, we talked about these 1-4 lines and how deep they are. They have guys missing, like Kevin Miller didn't play today. I'm not sure the status of Brandon Carlo, but as you get towards the playoffs and then you even go to the goaltending, which might even be your best feature, and you have a young stud and you have a veteran who's been there and done that, and then you also have a guy who has COVID who, you know, who's been a veteran guy. So I just think they're so deep when it comes to all around. Obviously, Tampa will still be the favorites or whatever going in. And, you know, that's still, you have to get through all these teams in the East. But I think the Bruins have a great chance. You know, I think they're playing they're starting to play their better hockey as you get closer to the postseason.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at, it's all about projecting what the team's going to look like by the time it gets to the postseason. And if Brandon Carlo can get back, if Kevin Miller can get back and stay healthy, which is first and foremost the biggest thing with Kevin Miller, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think the guy just obviously takes a beating. He's got that knee, but
Bruins.
Yeah. Can't believe he came exactly. back, to be honest. Yeah. Like, I thought he was done. Good for him.
It is crazy just the fact that when he signed that contract, I think everyone was, you know, very skeptical. One, because he gets signed and then like 20 minutes later, Torrey Krug leaves. So people will think that like the Bruins' big offseason signing was bringing back Kevin Miller. But I mean, he proved, I think, me and a whole bunch of people wrong, because I thought he was going to be a guy that you're going to see maybe once or twice, or he was going to be, you know, on the roster, but just practicing, wasn't going to be able to get healthy. And again, staying healthy is the biggest thing with him, but when he's in there, he's been nails. Like he's been fantastic. So, and you wonder, you know, how much different that series against the Blues would have been if he was just in there. Like, hey, that guy just, he's one of those guys where you have to take out the fancy stats or the analytics, which I admit that I love to like look at those just to like comb through players. For a guy like Kevin Miller, though, that doesn't apply. Cause the guys just get up for him. Like, the, you look at just how much they buy in that room, how much he means to, you know, the veterans, the younger players who look up to him as a veteran presence. Like, when he's in the lineup and he's playing, he's grinding through all the injuries he's dealing with. It seems like it just gives them that extra kind of boost. So getting him back and healthy for the postseason will be key. But yeah, I think you look at how they're going to look down the road in the playoffs. They can match up with, you know, most teams. They've got the skill. They've got the depth. I mean, we talk about Taylor Hall and how good he's looked with Krejci, but I think, you know, don't get lost in the shuffle is a guy like Craig Smith, who's got 18 points in 16 games.
Yeah, he's been a big underrated guy on this team this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's been huge. You know, McAvoy playing like a potential Norris Trophy candidate who's only going to get better, I think.
I always get confused, though, when I hear Craig Smith's name, because we interviewed former NBA veteran Craig Smith not so long ago. I'm like, yo, when the hell did Craig Smith switch sports?
Yeah, what a mix-up. Yeah, when did this happen?
Very, very generic names.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's to be expected, right? Yeah. But I think you kind of look at just the way the roster is built, and even kind of look at that 2019 team that came up short. A lot of the narrative about that was obviously not enough scoring, which they've seemed to have fixed this year. And also they got pushed around by the Blues. And if you've got Kevin Miller back in the mix, Trent Frederick, you've got Nick Ritchie, Jared Tenorti, it seems like they've kind of fixed that area as well. Like they're not stacked. Like the Capitals are going to be running guys, but they've got more than enough guys that are going to answer the call if, you know, guys get hit or knocked around or can kind of, you know, equal that physical tone. So again, it all is going to hinge on injuries and how guys are getting back healthy. But you kind of look at the way this team's built and the different kind of matchups they could be getting, whether it's a team like Washington or a team that's maybe more, you know, compacted defensively like the Islanders, or a team that a lot more skill like Tampa. whoever they go up against, they have matchups that they can exploit. That's just the way this team is built.
They play their own brand of hockey. Yeah,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. My last question I had here, so I'll kind of get away from this year's team. What's your all-time Bruins moment? Because there's been a bunch of different ones that you know we could get into, but I was just looking for your favorite one.
Oh, wow. That's tough.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
I can start to make it easier for you.
Give me a Sean Thornton.
So the Toronto Maple Leafs game 7, I think it was the quarterfinal, and was it 2013 when they're down 4-1 with 10 minutes left? Mm-hmm. I have a story here, I guess. So I'm sitting there with like two of my buddies and the girlfriend. Shout out to Shannon here. So they're down 4-1. She goes to the bathroom and they score the first goal. So it goes 4-2. And we're like, we're in some apartment near like Curry College. I don't know. It's getting bizarre. And then she's still in there. It goes 4-3. And I think we locked her in the bathroom. You know what happens next. They scored and then they won in overtime. And that was the story. So she stayed in there all night.
Yeah.
We got to throw her back in there for when the playoffs start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where was she? Game 7, 2019.
Right. At home.
Yeah, I think maybe the one there's so many. I'm trying to think of one where, you know, from recently, in 2019 when they played the Maple Leafs again. It's a running theme, right, of them playing and beating the Maple Leafs in 7 games in the first round. But I remember that was the year in 2019 where people thought that Maple Leafs were finally going to get past the Bruins of, all right, we've got Matthews and Marner, we've got John Tavares, you know, we're finally getting over the hump. So I remember the media in Toronto was all pumping their tires the entire time, which is the case every year. Wait till Toronto gets out of their, you know, cupcake division they're currently in, right, and play an actual team that's not up in Canada. But anyway, you kind of look at
that. Love to see the sweep. Would love it.
Yeah. So you go back to 2019, right, you get to game 7. I remember there was a whole bunch of hype about it because, you know, Toronto had – celebrities like chiming in. Justin Bieber was at the Garden for that game. They kicked people off the freight elevator to get Justin Bieber on it by himself to get. And of course, it's like this bootleg, like rusty ass, like freight elevator in the Garden that like he needed to like reserve for himself. So he's there. And before the game, he like posted this picture on Instagram and was like, "Please, Lord, if you let the Toronto Maple Leafs and Austin Matthews win, like, please let this happen." And like the Bruins, of course, win, beat the Maple Leafs once again. And we're going down to the press conference area, and I'm just checking my phone. You know, you wait about 15 minutes for the press conference stats. Mm-hmm. I'm just scrolling through Instagram, and I see that Justin Bieber thing. And the first comment on is from David Pastrnak on his own account, and he's right underneath it, "Not today, Justin." Like, all like, it's in like lowercase.
Not
this
tonight.
Is like, just this is legitimately like 5 minutes after the game. So like that guy like ran in the locker room and like grabs his phone and like just sent that right away. So like,
talk about
this,
billboard
like,
material.
Media,
Justin
course,
Bieber.
Yeah.
Of
all people to be chirping you is Justin Bieber. So like we were all losing it like in the press conference, like of how quickly he did that. And then afterwards he talks and like one of us goes up to him like, did you read the thing with Justin Bieber? He's like, yeah. Did you see it? It's hilarious. Like, those guys were all like, so
he's just one of the guys
like,
talking, yeah.
Yeah, just to put like Justin Bieber on a poster for trying to like, finally will the Maple Leafs over the Bruins for one. So who knows? Maybe it'll happen again this year.
That's great. Hey, Connor, really appreciate you coming on the show. Best of luck with everything going forward. And hope the Bruins get it done.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
And that was the Boston Sports Journal Bruins writer Connor Ryan. You know, I thought that was pretty swell, fellas. You know, going into this year's team, you know, we kind of looked at some flashbacks when we talked about favorite moments. And what do we think, guys?
Loved it. Get me to playoff hockey.
Yeah, I'm ready for Steele's beard to finally get shaved this fucking year. So let's fucking make it happen.
Let's go.
Back to the pub parking lot.
Oh, yeah, no question. And for a guy with two first names, he's a very nice guy. And I thought it was great of you.
Yeah.
You were going to have a problem list. With that. Yeah, you're not a big two first names guy.
I can't trust you if you have two first names. That's a fact.
Okay.
He seemed like a pretty trustworthy person.
Absolutely, yeah. And an authentic Southie accent, too. It was just brilliant.
Loved beautiful. It. Yes.
We'll jump on in the next subject. After 12 seasons with the Patriots, wide receiver Julian Edelman retires because his knee has given out. I'll go on, you know, a little rant, but I'll let you guys get the first thoughts. What do you think about Julian Edelman calling it?
I mean, sad, hate to see it. So sad. So sad. I mean, what a true legend, Patriot legend. I mean, what more? I mean, Brady Edelman. What more do you want?
Yeah, you know what? I expected it to come after. I thought this was his, like, last year of playing football.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously he got told, and remember the movie Moneyball, like everyone's told, like 1840. You remember
yeah.
that?
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, he was told. It must have been upsetting. And, you know, he's definitely a Patriots Hall of Famer, I think, no question.
Yeah.
But is he an actual Hall of Famer? And I think it's kind of easy. You got to put your fan hood aside. But, you know, you can answer that, Jimmy. What do you think? Hall of Famer or no?
You know, I texted you guys in the group chat earlier in the week. I'm like, if any of you guys come on the episode today and say that Julian Edelman's a Pro Football Hall of Famer, to bring the boxing gloves. I have calmed down a bit from, like, just viciously saying no. Because, again, you got to give the guy respect. Probably one of the best postseason receivers of all time. But the thing about it is, he's not done. He's not retiring. He's going to be in Tampa Bay in absolutely no time by week
Stole
one.
Stole my take.
Well, I mean, you can agree with me. But the thing is, Magic, I'm sure this wasn't a part of your take, was he did this retirement shtick just so he can get some fucking his dick sucked from Patriot fans. And it really just to save face with the Patriots fans because, you know, I tried to retire, but Tom and Gronk, you know, they made me come out of retirement and win a championship. And I'll say this, too. If he goes to Tampa Bay and wins the championship, catches like 70 balls and has a great postseason, his Hall of Fame chances, I think, will definitely rise.
It sounds like a believable theory, but it's just not going to happen. Like, his knee's gone. When you're a receiver like that taking hits, it's just not going to happen again. And then when you talk about Tampa Bay, they have a guy named Scotty Miller who's like him, but like 24. So like they don't even need him.
Exactly. You can just go chill, probably get some bench time.
Yeah, just literally hold it down. You know, say what's up to Tom, keep Tom happy.
It would be an awesome move. I would fucking respect it.
I mean, Tom would love to score a touchdown, come over to the bench.
Get him one touchdown for the year. That's fucking enough, honestly.
But, you know, if he is retiring, you can't put him in the Hall of Fame. I love the enthusiasm of Pats fans. I understand he's won 3 championships, but...
I say it's easy because I would put him in the Hall of Fame, but they're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame. When it comes down to it, when you get in the Hall of Fame, it comes down to numbers, and it comes down to competition, comparison to other people. And I would, just because you're defined in every sport by championships and what you do in the biggest moment. And you saw him in the biggest moments time and time again, that, you know, make the catch against Atlanta, catch the game-winning touchdown pass against the Seahawks. You know, be the Super Bowl MVP and one of the worst Super Bowls I've ever seen in the against the Rams.
Only guy that showed up until the Gronk catch.
At the end of the day, he's not going to get in, but I just think he should because of that. They're comparing like his stats or whatever, the Hines Ward. Hines Ward hasn't beat. Hines Ward, I think, is a no question Hall of Famer.
It is like that's part of that take that's nuts. Is like it's not just that like Edelman shouldn't be in because Hines Ward isn't in. Like Hines Ward should have just like easily been it.
Yeah,
like that shouldn't be like that was like a no brainer.
Another comparison I've just been seeing all week is you know who would you rather have, Wes Welker or Julian Edelman? And Wes Welker is a great player, you know. That's a numbers guy who could get in the Hall of Fame just because he has the numbers. But at the end of the day, you need a first down. I'm going with Julian Edelman the entire day. And that's not out of me liking Julian Edelman more than Wes Welker. I think even Wes Welker's heyday, I might even like Wes Welker more than Julian Edelman. I'm just saying, who would you want in that moment? And I think it's all Edelman, and I don't even think it's close.
No, 4th and 10 season on the line. Give me Tom Brady passing it to Julian Edelman over like anything ever.
What's it, Lonnie Pipp or whatever?
Wally Pipp.
The whole soundbite
Wally
there,
Pipp,
that was good.
Just that clip, I think it was from, not Hard Knocks, whatever, but it was from Patriots training camp, like I think Edelman's rookie year, and it was punt returning, and Welker was out on the sideline, and he was injured or whatever, and Bill's like, and Edelman I think just returned it for a touchdown, and Bill's like, oh, Welker, you know, this kid's gonna take your job. Welker was just like, oh yeah, he can have it, and Bill's like, kind of laughed it off, but you could tell it fucking pissed Bill off to the max. Way to compete, he said.
Coach Subway?
Coach Subway says, way to compete. And you could tell right then and there, Wes Welker was dead to him.
So that comparison was the guy who played first base before Lou Gehrig played all those damn games.
Like 2000 or whatever.
Yeah. So he's clearly just trying to get under Wes Welker's skin, which he did. Ended up going to the Broncos and losing the Super Bowl. But at the end of the day, I'm taking Julian Edelman over Wes Welker. It's very close.
I'll agree with that.
Insane, though. 0 Pro Bowls. You know, you have to mention that. I mean, what is the value of a Pro Bowl when you're going to the Super Bowl
not
almost
much.
Every other year? But
as a Patriots fan, like Pro Bowls, it's not a thing for me.
It matters though.
It doesn't grind the gears.
Shouldn't, dude? Because like,
how can the Pro Bowl is a fucking joke.
We're just talking to Connor there, and like, I think football and hockey are very like when it comes to like all-star appearances. You know, the last time like Bergeron's been in an all-star game, like 5 years, like that's so fucked.
Yeah,
like that guy, I wouldn't pick more than probably like five people in the NHL that rather than Patrice Bergeron.
No, yeah,
and the fact he doesn't get it because they have three all-star caliber players, or maybe even four if you throw Tuukka in there, like every single season. And like they're doing like these division things now, so you can really only have one, two max.
Yeah.
So it's like they're just getting screwed because they have good players.
It doesn't. Yeah.
Boston legend, Patriots legend. Hats off to a terrific career.
Future Steel and Nas guest.
Not over yet.
Oh, yeah. That'd be sick. That'd be an amazing. I wouldn't even feel worthy being on that episode, tell you that much.
We'll transition on into the best team. Well, tied for it now. They just actually got swept in a doubleheader to the Chicago White Sox this afternoon. But they're sitting at 10-6 at the top of the AL East. The surprising Boston Red Sox. You know, they've come on when people, you know, haven't given them a chance. I know we're only 16 games in, and I know I'm sitting across from a Yankees fan who has the worst team in the American League right now. But, like, we're sitting at 16 games, and I don't think this is going to keep up. What do you think, James? I know you're big on the Sox.
Man, yeah, it's pretty disappointing to losing to back-to-back games to the White Sox today, as you mentioned. But there's just a vibe of this team that's reminiscing of a few years ago when they won the championship. They're fun to watch. You got those brand spanking new uniforms. You know they can hit, and
that's what they can do though. Like that they can hit even when they've sucked the last couple of years. They've been one of the best offensive teams in baseball. But yeah, you can get a 15 game like stretch game of where you get pretty good pitching. Is this going to continue? Like, is the whole Matt Barnes zero ERA as a closer going to continue? Like, definitely not.
No.
Garrett Richards like still starting. Like he's pitched in three games and I think he's given at least five runs a game.
Well, we're in the step.
And his arm's going to snap in like 2 weeks anyway. Yeah. It happens every time.
And we're in the right direction. He shaved that god awful mustache he had on his fucking face for. I thought it was poop. I seen a picture of it. Red Sox put a picture up there. I thought it was like some poop smudge on his face.
Oh, boy.
But he shaved the mustache. I think he'll come around. I think he's a pretty good get for the Red Sox.
Yeah, Martin Perez pitched today, and I think he's pretty solid. I think they lost like some like low-run games today. So, I mean, it happens. You're not going to win everyone. But at the end of the day, this team has no pitching still. I'm calling bullshit. I'm calling bullshit on the Boston Red Sox right now.
I think it's a reverse psychology tactic.
I think that I don't they're believe pitching it. So bad that they're fucking good. That makes no sense.
That was a hell of a sentence you just put together. Yeah, that was a hell of a sentence.
I think that the Alex Cora effect, we got our man back. And I
back
think
to
that,
cheating, yeah.
Oh, hopefully. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. Shout out Eddie Guerrero.
Freaking right.
Love it.
Lie, cheat,
love
and steal.
It.
Love that. I can't
Tomlinson
hate on that.
As well. Yeah, no, you look at this team, too, and yeah, they have some all-stars. I think J.D. Martinez could be an all-star. I think Xander, you know, Devers, a bunch of them got that. But their real all-star is the coach. Alex Cora just brings in a whole new mentality. I mean, the guy, Ro Roenick or whatever it was last year, like, why did they even give that guy a job?
Oh, my God.
That guy was
embarrassing.
Just, it was like the captain of, like, the nursing home.
Last year was just it was a wash. It was a fucking wild.
So, Steele, how are your Yankees doing? Suck.
Yeah, that's whatever. It's April 18th. Baseball season starts after hockey. Could care less. On to the next one.
On to the next one. We'll move on. UFC 261. Oh, I'm skipping the Celtics. We'll go UFC first. 261, Kamaru Usman, Masvidal. I'm going to be there in Jacksonville. I'm going to meet up with Gardner, and it's going to get done. But we'll go around the table. You know what? I'll talk about my content. I'm going to go down there and get some content. I'm going to the fights. I'm trying to...
Don't get in a fight.
Get in Masvidal's way as
what
much as possible.
What kind of content do you plan on delivering us?
Enough.
Spoiler free.
Yeah, spoiler free.
Fine.
We'll be doing some golfing. We'll be getting on some boats. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Probably some nice bars. Hopefully stay out of some bad neighborhoods. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Should have got a ticket.
That might be where the content is, though. Who knows?
Yeah, that's probably where it is. But going into it, you know, rematch is the second one. I think Masvidal took the fight like a couple days in advance.
It was like six.
A couple days in advance before. He gets a full camp against, you know, one of the greatest guys I've ever seen stepping in an octagon in terms of Kamaru Usman. Masvidal's sitting at a plus 310 the last I saw. So he's a huge dog. Do we give the dog his day, or is Kamaru Usman clean house again?
I think it's the value pick. I think if Masvidal...
It's tremendous value.
If Masvidal can trick Usman into standing up the entire fight like Colby Covington did, Masvidal is infinitely better at stand-up fighting than Colby Covington is, and I think he can do it.
All those, like, stomping memes are so fucking funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He needs to, like, not allow that shit to happen.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
It's another thing that, like, you're... I'm going to this fight rooting for Masvidal. If you don't go to this fight and you're rooting for Masvidal, like, you got a problem here. I'm taking Usman. I think, you know, he's one of the top in the game. He's going to keep, you know, dominating. Masvidal is a good stand-up, I'm going to beat the shit out of you fighter. Kamaru Usman is the whole nine yards, the whole package. And you don't really see that nowadays unless you're, you know, talking about the greatest in terms of, you know, a Khabib or a John Jones type. Terms of, you know, they have everything that there is to have in game. I think Kamaru Usman has a potential, if he's already reached there or not, to be, you know, one of the greats.
Masvidal did do better in that fight, though, at not getting taken down than, like, almost anyone that's ever fought Kamaru Usman, which is, like, I mean, that's huge.
that just comes out to his history of bare knuckle brawling in Kimbo Slice's backyard.
Damn right.
Oh, I seen the most disgusting video the other day of Kimbo Slice. You ever see the video of Kimbo Slice popping that dude's cauliflower ear?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Delicious.
Yeah. I haven't, but that's
terrible.
I couldn't
sleep last night, man. We'll that was terrible. RIP Kimbo Slice.
Who you got in this fight?
I got Usman. I think it's going to be a repeat of last time. It's going to be kind of a boring fight where Usman just controls him. But yeah, I agree, man. Like, if you're not rooting for Jorge, you're mental. But Usman, I think, is another breed and knows how to win fights, and he's going to retain.
Yeah, I think it's Usman all day. Masvidal, I think it's going to be fun. There's three title fights. I know Rose Namajunas and...
She's fighting Zhang.
Zhang, and then Lee. The other one is...
Shevchenko, Andrade.
Love those chick fights. Those are actually really good fights. Hell yeah.
And then you also got Chris Weidman fighting too. It's going to be a good card.
You got your boy Cody fighting? No. Or is that coming up soon?
That's May 22nd.
Okay. Mark down the calendar.
Locked and loaded.
Rob, Magic, who do you have in this fight?
Rob Font, where are you?
I got Masvidal with the crowd noise. They'll probably be chanting for him.
Florida, absolutely.
I think he's
a Miami guy, but like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. The crowd's going to play a factor. And their first time back in the arena sold out. I think Masvidal shocks the people.
Shocking the world.
Are you willing to put a gallon of milk on it?
I don't dump milk on my head. I'll dump Nooners on my head.
Nooners,
that could even
be
better.
Yeah.
I got
a 12-pack of Nooners on the line for next week if Lights on Lang loses to the Trapzilla.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So does that mean you might go back-to-back Nooners if you put it on the other fight, too?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
That might be 24.
Do one at a time.
Yeah. It's going to be $30 dumped on my head.
Speaking of amateur boxing, your boy, which Paul brother was it that fucking fought last night?
Jake Paul.
Jake Paul. Yeah, what do you think about that, Magic?
I thought I wanted him to win. I think it could have been staged 100%. I think he probably could have been like, Ben, I'll fucking pay you whatever amount of money you want so you can walk off into retirement. Just give me a good meme. That's how he makes even more money with good memes and whatever.
NFTs. I'll go retro.
NFTs, yeah.
I'll go retro on you. I'll bring back the bonehead of the week. You know, Ben Askren, smart guy.
He looked like shit. He looked like fucking shit.
There's not a chance he even worked out for this fight. Like, he looked like he just came, like, fresh out of Pizza Connection with a buffalo chicken calzone all over his tits.
Legit.
So he's walking into the ring. I'm like... I bet on Askren, thinking like, this UFC guy will take care of business.
No.
He's a grappler. I know he's just like a submission artist. But I'm like, all right, this guy Jake Paul is not like the real thing. And then I saw him get in the ring. I'm like, wow, that money's gone. I was like, wow.
I mean, yeah, when Jake Paul walked out with the robot, not that that fucking mattered. He's the pageantry of Jake Paul and the whole show last night
was a shit show.
It was a terrible show, but the pageantry was there.
I'll give Snoop Dogg a lot of credit. He was tight.
Oh, Snoop Dogg should have
known
everything.
It was like
literally
watching
everything.
It was like watching a live strip show.
I just want my $2 million. Yeah.
Like it like opened with like, I'm fucked.
He smoked at least like 15 blunts last night.
Yeah, the over. Yeah, whatever you want to set the over-under at, it's over.
My thing with Ben Askren, though, and, like, obviously, I know he came in out of shape. I know he didn't, like, do any full camp. There's not a chance. But this guy got offered $500K to just be in a fight. If I get a – I'm thinking he was thinking, all right, first big blow, I'm just, like, dramatically going down.
Well, that's what he did.
And that happened, in the first 20 seconds.
It looked a lot like Canseco.
I don't know if, like, I would have taken the dive – unless obviously did some betting thing, I absolutely would not have trained for that if I was like not a fucking.
What does he do next? Is Ben Askren's like he's got to be done?
I would have drank beers,
right?
Showed up, and got that paycheck.
Dude, the thing about that last night.
I'm sorry, go.
The thing about that last night, that was just like a Tosh.0 web redemption.
Yeah, I saw you tweet that.
I tweeted this, but I really thought like, yo, his most embarrassing moment in his entire life was getting knocked out in 6 seconds by Jorge. This was basically the same thing, but this time, ha ha ha, jokes on all these pay-per-view fucking buyers because I'm just going to jokingly fight this YouTube fucking schmuck and make $500,000. And God knows what else money he made, probably betting on himself to lose. The whole thing was a sham. How the fuck Triller, whatever the fuck it's called, afforded this event? Definitely selling drugs, definitely laundering money, this company. But shout out Snoop Dogg.
Bitcoin had to have been involved.
Maybe.
There was cryptocurrency Dogecoin involved last night. It was a weird event.
Yeah, NFTs, dude. Every commercial is like
a lot
NFTs,
of NFTs. Crazy. Top shot. Crypto
going
voices.
Forward to like fill my void for never watching Thriller again, I'm just going to like look up videos of like Snoop Dogg smoking weed. And like I'll be fine. You know, like, yeah, I don't need anything else. Besides that, the only part I liked was like Snoop Dogg getting fucked up and commenting. That was literally the only part I liked about it.
What about the slap fight? That was pretty electric.
Oh, that was good.
Electric. Triller got a fan out of me last night. I mean, they should have more fucking
right
boxing fights. Frank the Tank Mir looked like absolute dog shit.
Frank Mir fought.
He came out at 275 looking fat
was
as
that
fuck.
The second fight. I don't know.
It couldn't even. The fight looked fucking fake.
I forgot
fake.
About the slap fight. That was incredible.
Guy got knocked out by his, like,
that
a legit
was
slap.
Pure domination by that slap fight. Like, that guy, that was like. That was nuts.
I would say, like, if there was a full card of slap fights, I would like take a Saturday night to be like, yeah, let's booze up and watch.
So as much as we're making fun of Triller, they could have put on a decently electric show.
They could have. They it had the potential if they just did more of other things.
Yeah, Steel and Naz slap fight tournament to come.
Maybe
might have. We need to get Ric Flair though. That was huge.
Yeah, Ric Flair looked like dog shit as well. He was red as a tomato.
He was like talking shit to the guys, be like, "Oh, you can't flinch," and it's like, "Buddy, you're way past your prime."
At least he's like 80. Yeah, he should look like shit. Like,
I still can't
like
believe
different.
How bad Frank looked. Like as bad as Ben Askren looked. Frank the Tank. I've never seen a guy tank so hard.
Askren's like 35. Like he should have looked better than that. Ric Flair, whatever. A lot of beer and drugs.
Our last segment of the night. After how many years, Jennifer Lopez splits for like the 20th guy in the last like 15 years from A-Rod.
You calling her a whore?
No, I'm just saying, you know, not stable. I would never say that type of thing. fuck. So we're going to play a little game. I'll leave J-Lo out of this. Who should A-Rod date next? Does anyone have a...
Well, A-Rod should probably date the Celtics because we skipped the Celtics.
You know, we talk about the Celtics plenty. We'll get to them next week.
My idea for A-Rod, though, is to continue the great rivalry between the Yankees and Red Sox. Mr. Steal Your Girl takes Jenny Dell right from Will Middlebrooks. And you can't say that's a bad selection because Jenny Dell was one of my first crushes ever. I mean,
Anton, she would come in his building. He was like, she is the hottest girl he's ever seen. But he still says that.
Yeah, and that's a fact. I think that'd be great storyline.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
I got a different one here. So Aaron Rodgers, you know, split from his girl. I think his girl is on the table. Danica Patrick?
Yeah.
You go from J-Lo to Danica Patrick.
Danica
I mean, no.
Patrick, I saw.
She's probably a freak.
She went on the Corp, A-Rod's podcast.
Oh, nice.
And like he asked this like blatant question that I just was just so awkward, but they just played it off, which led me to believe. I'm like, is there something more to these two people?
What did he ask? Favorite position?
No. He asked, like, how do you deal with like being cute and hot? And I was just, it was just.
That was the question?
Yeah, it was like, usually like, oh, you're obviously like gorgeous. I'm like.
That is pretty flirty for A-Rod. Like, I mean, A-Rod's like, a lame duck on that podcast. So that's risque for him.
That led me to believe. Yeah.
You might be right. You might be honest.
Well, Aaron Rodgers' last girl was Olivia Munn, right?
And she is a freak. She's a known freak.
Well, how do you know that?
Show, like G4 TV.
She had some dirty pictures come out or something.
Oh, that's nice. I know what I'm doing later.
Yeah, go look into that for sure.
Chill. Any ideas for A-Rod's next love, guys? Magic?
I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm lost.
Rachel
I love
Star?
The Jenny Del pick, though.
I was probably going to go the porn direction. Mia Khalifa seems like she's been making a comeback. She's heavily invested in Dogecoin, so I don't know. I think she's a Miami girl, A-Rod.
Yeah.
He spends his time in Miami, right?
I could really see them together.
I think it sounds like you should be that Magic.
I plan on heading there.
Oh, also, soon. Kim K's single, too. Kardashian.
That's a good tip. I like that one the best.
And she dates athletes before?
Yeah.
Humphries
I think like Twitter would literally just break down.
Why did they break up? Any reason?
I don't think it went public.
Yeah, I don't know.
You do hate to see it. That's a tough loss. I mean, they looked very in love. They looked very in love. It's once really again, don't even bother trying to get fucking married. It's just a waste.
I think we'll end it on that. That was a good note. Folks, want to thank you for tuning in as well as BSJ's Connor Ryan for coming on the pod. It's starting to get nice out there. Just had a big softball game last week.
Walk-off win.
I got to give a shout-out to Vinny Cameron, big walk-off double to start off the season.
Yo, Vin.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
We were told to shout-out Andrew McBride, intern Andrew, for his song choice. What is it called? Don't Back Down by Tom Petty? Is that the name of it?
That's a great song.
We played that and absolutely... It was
probably the worst softball game I've ever seen. The other team, if they were listening to this podcast, they were awful. We were awful. Like it just
was
first game of the year.
It was a great game.
That
other team was not a great game. Like we just won by default.
First
game of the year, can't hold anything back.
Oh, I will.
I think I had the first hit for the team. So
no, I did, but
fuck.
So suck it. No,
that's the second time you told me to suck it.
you had the best. You had the best first hit. Mine was just like a dribbler. Yours was just like. Oh,
anytime
damn,
I get a hit, the crowd goes contact. Crazy.
Yeah,
they're like fucking Magic. How's he doing that?
You walk off, dude. And you walk off.
And then we try to get him like off first base, and he's like, "Nah, I want to run. Love it."
Yeah, softball's back officially. Big things coming with that this year.
That's all from Steel and Naz, Mass Music Radio's Pioneer Podcast. Great to get back in the studio here. Everyone have a good week. Let's get it.
Let her rip.
Yup.